Deseamos que hermano Plácido recuerde cuando vayas a México, será nuestro amigo amado siempre.
We hope that brother Plácido will remember when he goes back to Mexico that he will be our dear friend forever.
That song has some, they didn't know it because they weren't there, but it holds some special memories for every young person that's sitting here today that was at a youth camp. There's been a lot of special memories this whole week for many of us. Where's the time gone? I think it's been spent wisely. The efforts here that many have made are big efforts. you know, tonight it's a privilege for me, and it's easy for me to be the one to introduce Jay. He's the guy that's got the burden. And anybody that stood behind this desk knows what a burden it can be. And I would ask your prayers for him. It seems like in Phoenix anymore, we see more of his lovely family than we see of him. And I would to God that there was more people like him, more people willing to give up some beautiful parts of life that we all take for granted to be of service to God. I hope you will take his sermon tonight as the dessert. We're all kind of full, I think. We just got through eating. But there's always room for ice cream that'll melt and run down over. And tonight, you know, there's got to be some extra spaces. Just let it melt into you and run all over and fill you up for good. And so I give to you our brother and our apostle, Jay Moser.
Thank you, Joel. Got all choked up during that song. I'm not really sure why. Those girls sang that, I think, because they know Placido liked it, and they sang it for him as a little going-away present. I was asked by someone last night at the young people's meeting if those people down there in Mexico, you know, do they have a sense of humor, and do they ever kid around, they certainly do, all the time, as a matter of fact. Of course, as you all know, they have very little, but they have each other and they enjoy each other. That's their main thing in life, they enjoy one another. Well, I to give you an example of their sense of humor, well, I got off of the standing in back of Don's truck here when I first came on Thursday evening, and we had to unpack a little bit, and I got my arms full of sleeping bags and junk and hopped out through the door, and Placido was standing down there grinning at me, and he says, "Look, the circus is coming." And then on the way out here to the truck again, or out to put our stuff away, he says, "Look, the circus is leaving." He says, and but they say those kind of things all the time. It's a great pleasure to be with them. I'd like to thank you for being on such good behavior while he was here. He got a pretty good a pretty good cross section of the way we live, I think, and the way we worship. He was privileged to be with the young people, and he got to see a baptism. He got to see an ordination this morning. Sacrament services, which are different than theirs. And I thank you for your participation. There's one last favor I'd like to ask of you, and that is that if the Lord blesses us so much that we can continue this, you're going to have to change just a little bit. And that is that to understand them just a little bit, and that is that their lifestyle is built around associating with one another. And so greetings, probably they'll say hello quite a long time, and then they say goodbye when, after they're through talking quite a while. And they always shake hands when you see them, and then when they part, they always shake hands again. And so, what I'm asking you to do is that you would do the same thing for Placido today. If you don't think you're going to see him again, and even if you do, shake his hand and tell him hello and tell him goodbye, and also tell him that you're thinking of the brothers there. It's because when he goes back, you know, they're going to want to know, what did you say? And he's going to tell them. If you didn't say anything, he may not be able to tell them. But he needs to know, yes, the brothers and sisters send their greetings to you. So you have got to do that. You've got to do that. That's the way they live. Well, that song that they sang, it kind of reminded me. You know, those of you who know music and have been around much longer than me, you know, and I don't know anything about music, but I know that song is a little different than the music that's been played for centuries. There's something about it, it's a tiny bit different, isn't it? Just it's the music from my generation. I like that song. But I think it's evident that we're changing And I don't think there's anything wrong with our changing, as long as it's a good change. But we are. Just a tiny bit. Day after day, we're changing. This morning during our service, I had cause to remember my grandmother. With a great deal of fondness, I remember my grandmother, Ruth Willard. I'm sure most of you remember Ruth Willard. With fondness, if you knew her at all, she would have been very difficult not to like. She was always very friendly and very cheerful and during my life and to me. But there was one thing that my grandmother was and that to me was of such great importance. She was chaste. She was pure. Our music can change, and our lifestyles change, but if we're not chaste and pure in heart, well, I don't need to say any more, I guess, do I? You know, that's the very important part. You know, during this reunion, I've listened to the sermons, and I've enjoyed them. And I wanted to tell you something. The message that I had today, I didn't prepare a lot of scriptures. I prepared some, a few this morning and a few yesterday morning, but I had something I wanted to tell you, which I absolutely know to be the gospel truth. Beyond any shadow of a doubt in my mind. I know it from my own experience, so I know it to be true. There's a price we have to pay. The gospel's free, but there's a price we have to pay to obtain the blessings of God. There's a cost to it. God gave us this nation. You and I gave us this nation of freedom. Someone paid a dear price for it. Many years ago, the blood of our forefathers is in this land. It's a dear price. And God puts a price on His precious gifts. A dear price, because if we just are given these things, His gifts, we don't appreciate them unless we have to sacrifice something for them. In our personal lives. Well, the cost of God's gifts, I'm just going to try and tell you one thing today that I believe, one main thing that is the cost of God's gifts. I'm going to read from the book of Revelations a verse or two. In the third chapter, the 20th verse, it reads like this. It says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and will sup with him, and he with me. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches." It's an important scripture to me today because I believe that the Lord has spoken to us throughout this reunion in various ways with little messages that haven't come from sometimes with great power, but they've just been there. So if you're in tune with the Spirit, I would hope that you've heard some of these little messages that have been given to us, and the Lord is knocking. The Lord is knocking, and He always has. Nothing different about today than there was yesterday or the bygone days of my grandmother. He's the same. But the Lord is knocking at the door, and we, of course, must open the door. I'd like to tell you what I think a part of that door is. I believe with all my heart, every fiber of my soul, that one of the chief ingredients to opening that door for any individual or any church is desire. just true, pure desire, want, our will, our desire, the thing that which we want to have, opens the door. But it doesn't necessarily come very easy to have that door open. But desire is certainly the key. Don and I like to go to the little town of Maipon. Our brother Placido is the pastor there, Maipon. Maipon, we enjoy it. And this year, or this last trip at least, we've just kind of begun, because of the language barrier, to try and get to know some of these people much better. And we've discovered, like all of us, they have problems and imperfections also. But there's one thing about Maipon that I am sure of when I go there, and that is, for some strange reason, in this wild place, it's the same town Don spoke about last year during the reunion at the end of the road. For some strange reason, the Spirit of God is upon this people, there in Maipon, works with them. But some of the individuals there, it's just evident. When they speak in Maya, we don't know what they're saying sometimes, but it's just evident. We just know it. We hear a young man, Don, I like to listen to this young man, his name is Secundino, or Gallo, and he prays. And we just heard him pray in Spanish for the first time. But when he prays, the whole church just is just absolutely silent. And I don't know why. They just listen to him. It's uncanny. It's just, he prays or he speaks and everybody just quiets down. Lives in a stick hut. Well, he's got some good friends there. Angel, his name is Angel Angel. He was baptized while we were there this trip. And Angel, he's one of the people that can speak a little more Spanish than the rest of the people, so he can communicate with us. And so Angel, you can see there's him down the road about a block, and you know who it is, because he's got this big smile on his face, and you always know that that's Angel, and you can see his big smile and recognize him by that smile. Friendly. His wife and him and he were baptized. We had a very personal moment, as we had this morning. You know, sometimes we have some very intimate moments with our brothers and sisters. Very personal. It touched the deepest, most personal parts of our life. And I felt that way with Angel this trip. He was baptized, he and his wife. And we went to a place there. It's kind of like a marsh, and has clear water, though. And I went out and stood in the water waiting for him. And they sang a song, and then he walked up to the edge of the water, and he stopped, and he said a prayer out loud, said his prayer out loud. And then he came down into the water and he stood there, and I told him some last instructions, you know, what we were going to do and how to do it. And he said, just a minute, I want to pray again. And he prayed again. He prayed in Spanish, I think maybe so I could understand. And it was a very personal moment. Very beautiful. And he was baptized, and his wife came in, and she couldn't pray in Spanish, so she prayed in Maya. Did the same thing, but it was a very touching, very personal moment. So I feel kind of close to them. And I feel close to Gallo, and I'm always amazed, you know. Don and I like to watch him when he's praying. Just something about him, you know. He just has a personality that you are drawn to. And also, there's another young man, his name is Herman. And you may have seen his name written in the Advocate, and it looked like German, but it's Hermann. And Hermann, first time I met Hermann, was on a dark street, and he was waiting by himself. And from what I understand, Don says, this is what he's done for years. stood on this dark street waiting for the brothers to come down from Zaan up to Mayapan to have church that night. And he'd wait out on the street by himself in the dark and stand there silently and patiently and wait and wait. Because there's no telephone, don't know exactly when you're coming, just wait. He speaks broken Spanish. I think I speak Spanish better than he does, and it's kind of amazing, you know. But he speaks broken Spanish, and he stutters and stammers when he's trying to speak Spanish. But he's always there, Hermann. He's married, has a couple of children, I believe. Two? Hermano? Plácido? Hermano tiene dos hijos? Uno? One child. So, Hermano, he's the guy that we've been... it's a great responsibility that this Hermano has. It's difficult, and we have to say that right out, and it's a problem that we have in Mexico, and one that we share with Plácido and his father and a few others, and that is, there's a lot of money comes from here, and you all know that. A lot of money comes and goes down there, and we build churches and things like that for them, and we have to find somebody we can trust with money. It's a tremendous temptation to have more money in your hand than you've ever seen in your life. Quite a temptation. Difficult. But Hermann has been their treasurer and representative, and we've given him that money to build that church there in Mayapan. And he has given his time and his effort. And we need to pray for Hermann, and I'll tell you why a little later. So anyway, Hermann was there on the side of the road, and I met him, and we said hello, and he was there so he could tell us where the service was going to be. This was 3 years ago. So he could tell us where we were going to meet and have our service. He showed us the way and hopped in the back of the truck and told us how to get there. And we drove up, and then he kind of guides us down in there to see where we're going. Well, I watched Hermann during the confirmation service for those two baptisms. I studied him for a few minutes. And I observed him as he sat in the front row. Don preached a little explanatory sermon about the confirmation and what it signifies, you know, and the reception of the Holy Ghost and how important it is. And Don turned in the Spanish Book of Mormon. He turned to page 110, and he told everyone, if you want to read and follow along, turn to page 110. And Hermann fumbled through his book, and he found the page. And he sat there motionless in his chair and with his black eyes and looking at that page. And just like he was fixed on those words. His mind, I could tell, because of his lack of education, his inability to maybe comprehend as much about Spanish as so many others can, being out there so far away. He was fixed. His eyes were fixed, and they never even moved. But I could watch him, and he started, and he was right at the bottom of the page, there, towards the bottom of the page where Don was reading. And Hermann, I could see him studying those words. And all of his attention was focused upon what was written there, and he was not moving a muscle, just looking at that and studying the words on the bottom of page 110, and I could just barely see his eyes moving across the page, real slow. Well, Don had to, he went on some more and explained some more things and about the confirmation, and they got about time ready to sing a song, and I looked over at Hermann, and he was still looking at that book. And it had been about 5 minutes, and now he was on page 111. And he was looking at the top of page 111. There's a great price that we pay to have the Spirit of God. And it's measured by how hard we work, I think. How hard we labor to try and and how much we hunger, as Gary said yesterday, hunger and thirst after righteousness and truth. And Herman hungers for knowledge and for truth. And he's a good man. A good leader. He's a good leader. But if you had to study that hard, I wonder, how would you fare if you had to study that hard? It took you so long to absorb and to gather the meaning of a word that you had to focus your entire attention on the page and on the words that were there, and it took you several minutes to get through a page. How well would you do? How well would you fare with our education? Well, the Lord knows how to place a price upon His Spirit. Desire, want. And the Spirit of God is there. They always kill us when we go there, you know. They feed us to death, and they always, you go from one house to another, and they all want to feed you. Eat at one house, and 5 minutes later, someone else wants you to come visit in their house, and they want you to eat again. They keep us up late. I'm saying there have been times when we'd ministered to people there 30 deep, and by the time you get done at the end of a service and go visit some more people and have some more refreshments, and it's time to go to bed, and Placido's through talking at 2 a.m. in the morning with discussing their problems and their needs with the brethren there, we get pretty tired. That's my pawn. And that's, I believe, when those few people, we found out there's a lot of them that got problems. Some of them, you know, are alcoholics. Some of them are jealous. Some of them are having problems with not being able to take what we can give. You know, we try to supply electricity and water for all the people we can, within reason. But there are some people there because we haven't been able to supply and buy more things, when it's not really feasible to supply their electricity, it's too far away. We'd have to pay all the posts that go in. It just would cost too much. So they're unreasonable and don't want to wait. And so they're offended. So they got problems in Mayapan. And Herman's got a problem. And I want you to pray for Herman, because we need Herman. He's given his time and running around trying to get material and hiring contractors and making sure the work was done and taking care of the money, and he's done all this and tried to keep a little record of what he's spent. But his wife feels like their family's been neglected. That's one of the problems of trying to spread the gospel. It's one of the sacrifices, and I don't know any other way to do it anywhere in the world than, if you're in one place, you can't be in another place. You can only be one place at a time. There's no other way. But that shows to me Herman's desire. But I want you to pray for him and his wife, because we really like Herman. He's a good man. And I think that the Lord has a work for him to do. And we're very hopeful for him, and hopeful that his wife will support him a little bit more. But she feels neglected. Well, so I'll go on here. Speaking of desire, awful lot of things I could say about it. Desire shown by what we do every day, by what we spend our money on, where we spend our time, who we spend it with. But I truly believe that your desire will open up that door, your true, pure desire. If I go to Matthew and the 5th chapter and read a verse there, maybe two, or maybe I'll reread the one that Gary read yesterday, the 6th verse of the 5th chapter of Matthew said, "Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." And if you know your Book of Mormon, you know it says they shall be filled with the Holy Ghost. What an important thing to be filled because of your hunger and your thirst. And I hope that we have not lost in this new generation of which I'm a part of, we have not lost our hunger and our thirst for truth and for righteousness, that this world has not supplied our needs, because it cannot supply our needs. The eighth verse, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And of course you know, I'm sure, that the heart that they're speaking of here is the place, the residence of your will, the place where you make up your mind and your decisions, and the place that you, where everything you want resides. That's where it is. It's in your heart. And I hope your desires are pure before God. You have a pure heart. And the door will open. I could read, and maybe I will. It's quite simple. I really enjoy studying things that are sometimes complicated and trying to find out, getting to the root of something. But maybe not at a time like this. We need simplicity in times like a reunion. Pure and simple simplicity. What do I do when I leave this door? When I leave this room and walk out that door and go back into the world? This is what you do. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart. Not part of it. Not some of it. But all your heart. And with all thy soul. And with all thy mind. And that is the first and great commandment that we must do. And it shows our desire, our pure desire before God. Well, you know, young people, I wanted to tell you something, and that, and all people, of course. And that is that there are things in this life that you cannot put in a box that make up your entire life. You can't put the kind of person you are in a box. I can look and see the works of someone else and see them with my eyes, but I don't know what's in their heart. And there are things we cannot put in a box, such as honesty. And you know, my grandmother, I want to get back to my grandmother. My grandmother was a pure and chaste woman all her life. She shuddered at the thought of sin. And taught me as a little boy, you know, I had the opinion as a little boy, well, I can try. It's not going to hurt me if I drink a little. It won't hurt me if I just take a little bit. I can try it, you know, there's nothing going to be to happen to me. And I said that in the presence of my grandmother. And she said, no. Absolutely not. Don't even try it. And I have found out in my life, grandmother was right. Don't waste your time. Don't waste your time with the things of this world. How quickly, in just a moment, you can get into so much trouble by just trying something. Today, it's even more evident than it ever was, I suppose, with the abundance of things like cocaine. In a moment, your life can be over. Just a moment. And it's too late. But it's true of a lot of things. Your life can change. I know young people and older people and middle-aged people whose life was changed in just a few moments of time when they made a decision to do something in just a few moments. But the Lord told us what to do. He told his disciples what to do in the Garden of Gethsemane. He told them what to do. He says, watch and pray. I had an experience in Yucatan. During one night, I woke up in the middle of the night. I had a nightmare. Didn't have a dream, wasn't a spiritual dream, but when I woke up, I remember what my dream was, or part of it, and it frightened me. When I woke up, I was mad. I was upset. And I was upset at a person. And I woke up and woke me out. I punched my pillow or something and I woke up. And I woke up and I realized how quickly we can get into trouble. And I was afraid. I was afraid that I asked for forgiveness and for help and for the Spirit of God in that moment, so I could keep His Spirit with me. And just a quick, a small moment, we can get into so much trouble. Things that can never be called back once you make a mistake. You can't call it back. You can be forgiven, but Some things can never be called back the way that they, in this life anyway. Perhaps in the next, they can be washed completely away. But sometimes things we make mistakes, and sometimes we got to live with them all our life. And that's a hard thing to swallow. It's kind of like the old story about Humpty Dumpty, you know, sat on a wall, had a great fall. And all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. It's a simple thing, but it's the absolute truth. It's the absolute truth. I believe in miracles, but I believe the Lord requires the children of men sometimes to own up to some of the mistakes which they make. And not that they're not forgiven, not that they can't be happy, but it alters their life. It alters their life in some way. Well, so these things we can't put in a box, like honesty, chastity, the values that we need, integrity, strength. That's one thing we need, is strength. Very much so. I think that the day is here. I truly do. I think the day is here when we need strength. Maybe an hour such as the Christians in times past have known. There's violence in the world. There's violence in our own country, and people are condoning it. They think it. Violence. And I'm not going to get any kind of philosophical discussion. I believe in the death penalty. I don't know if you do or not, but I do. However, I listened to a sermon the other day, and the man made a point. I thought it was very good. He watched on the news an execution, and they didn't show the execution, but they showed the people watching the execution. And he says he saw them when they executed them, they all clapped. They clapped. And they yay, you know, they were. I don't know, that's kind of scary to me. I think our nation is getting that way. There's been so little justice for so long, and in things like that, we feel that, you know, so many people have been unjustly treated, and victims are the ones who are punished, and the guilty go free in so many places that our people have been conditioned, and their thoughts have been changed and altered, and they're now getting angry and possibly could be easily led. And I see people that I think are willing, in an unorganized way, to come storming in here and tear up all your books. I heard those prophecies about us losing our books. I think that's a real possibility from a bunch of nuts, not from an organized group, but a bunch of crazy people come in here because they on some spree out in Phoenix. We've had vandalism in some of the churches there, spray painting, destroying the pews with axes and tearing things apart and breaking the cabinets and painting everything, and just from a bunch of children or gang members or who knows. But that's the kind of world we live in. That's a very real possibility. And I think we need strength. Strength to be able to live with those kind of things if and when they should happen to us. That was in the Book of Mormon. There is a promise, or it's a prophecy, or it's a statement that the Lord made through one of his prophets about when people get to the place where they cast the righteous out from among them, then the true wrath of God comes upon them. Maybe that's the kind of thing that has to happen. And I don't like to talk about it, but if it happens, if it did happen in 2 or 3 years and we didn't talk about it, but the saints in all eras of time, we come from a people who have received the power of God in the moments when they needed it, to give them what they needed, the strength and the determination to do things which they of themselves could not do other than through the gifts of God. Well, I'm going to read a scripture from the Book of Mormon, and then I think possibly I will try and wrap this thing up. My thoughts have been given to you that I feel that were given to me, and it's sufficient. And I'm going to read here in the 9th chapter of the 3rd Book of Mormon. I'm going to read verses 24 through 26. And it reads like this. And it came to pass that when Jesus had thus prayed, unto the Father, he came unto his disciples, and behold, they did still continue, without ceasing, to pray unto him. And they did not multiply many words, for it was given unto them what they should pray. And they were filled with desire. And it came to pass that Jesus beheld them as they did pray unto him, and his countenance did smile upon them, and the light of his countenance did shine upon them, and behold, they were as white as the countenance and also the garments of Jesus. And behold, the whiteness thereof did exceed all the whiteness, yea, even there could not be nothing upon earth so white as the whiteness thereof. And if we, through our desire, show our Heavenly Father, and I don't think it necessarily takes a great deal of time to show our Lord our desire, but He'll test it. He'll try it. I feel fortunate to be here with you. I'm only here because of the blessings of the Lord and because of some of His children that helped me to get here. I was stranded on the road, more or less, not alone, but stranded on the road. And I have since found out there's all kinds of our people that have been having all kinds of car problems lately. And had I been alone, of course, I wouldn't be here. But I am, and it was a kind of a trial to me to leave my car there and let someone else take care of it for me. It was really kind of a trial. I've never really quite done anything like that before in my life. And it was difficult. But I did, and I'm glad I'm here. But I think the Lord is and knows how to test your desire. You're having problems in your life? Do you still want to worship God? He'll know. He'll find out. He'll find out what kind of person you are. Somehow. Through some trial, He'll test your faith. He'll test it to see what you're made of. Are you made of gold? Or are you made of wood? What are you made of? What is your true desire? And I believe with all my heart that this is a principle of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that God always gives to every soul what He wants, whether it's happiness or misery. According to His plan, whether we are willing to submit to Him, He gives us what we would choose, what we would choose. If we would choose to rebel, He would give us unhappiness. If we would choose life and to enjoy the Spirit of God, to commune with Him, and we hunger and thirst, and our desire is tested and proven to be correct and to be good and to be true, that's exactly what we'll have. I found in my own personal life that through desire, through moments of need, the Lord has come to me in a moment. In an instant when I have asked and prayed with a great deal of fervent prayer, that He's answered me in those moments, in those very moments, just because I wanted it and I was willing to listen to what He had to say, and He gave it to me. And I think He answers just that quick. And you can test Him and prove Him to see if He is true. But if it's not your real desire, He's not going to answer anything. Only if it's your true desire. And if your desire is to do this work of the gospel, you'll have more work to do than you know what to do with. I can tell you right now that there's more work to do in the United States than we know what to do with. But we need someone who really, truly wants to do it. Who really wants to do the work for the Lord. You don't want a position or a place. You just want to work for God. And if that's your desire, God will help you to see how you can help in some way by using whatever talents that He's given you, whatever they may be, to use you to help in His work in some small way. Maybe in a big way. It's hard to say. But it's up to you. It's your decision. It's your choice to make. Beginning today and from now on, it's your choice And as you wake up every morning and you pray earnestly and you ask him to even, you know, though he tests you, I can personally testify that he's tested me in my life for years to see if I really wanted to work. In one way or another, when I was a teenager, I thought I was just going to die. I know all about being a teenager. I know what it's like our brother was telling about he in his life, how he lost his arm and the problem that he had. We know what these problems are like and what it's like to wrestle and struggle. But if it's your desire to overcome, he's at the door. May God bless you.
Young men like me aren't supposed to forget important things, but we do, and we have a sister down here that would like to be administered to, and we're going to take care of that. I'm going to ask Brother Glenn Gill and Brother Allen.
Giver of all good things, knowing that you care.